Hey, what is going on? And welcome to the Crypto Bobby Podcast. Today, I have a very special guest. It is Ryan Shea, the co-founder of Blockstack. If you're not familiar with Blockstack, they are creating a new internet where developers can build decentralized applications on top of it. And while that is a crowded space in some respects, Blockstack is taking a very different and intelligent approach. And because the co-founders have really strong backgrounds in engineering from Princeton, distributed systems, I think that the way they're approaching it makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm really excited to see them continue to progress as there are literally developers actually building applications that are being used by a lot of people on the platform. So I hope you enjoy this interview, this conversation. As a quick heads up, this interview is not sponsored. I have no money invested in Blockstack. I simply think this is one of the more interesting projects that is currently in existence in the space right now. I'm fascinated by what they're doing. So I hope you sit back and enjoy this conversation. A lot of great nuggets in here from Ryan Shea in regards to how they approach it, the technology, as well as just how they view the industry as a whole. So let's dive into that discussion with Ryan Shea. Sit back. Hope you enjoy.
I went to Princeton for mechanical and aerospace engineering. I was there studying for my undergrad, and I also did a computer science as a minor. And one of the things that I spent a lot of my time on was the Princeton Entrepreneurship Club. So that was it's like this pretty large organization, one of the largest at the school. And through that, and through some computer science classes, I actually met Muneeb Ali, which is my current co-founder with Blockstack. And I've always been really interested in technology, in startups and innovation. And this is what kind of like what motivated me to get really involved in it throughout college. And I would like consume everything that I could get my hands on, like read everything about startups. I'd be on Twitter and like following blogs from people who are really prominent in the space. And then, you know, even when I was in a sophomore in college, I went out and studied computer science at Stanford, decided to just spend my summer there and also interning at a couple of companies, and then just like going to different parties in Silicon Valley and getting like a kind of acquainted with the space. So that was like my first introduction to entrepreneurship and startups. Worked on a couple of different startups throughout college, and then and right after college and when I graduated. And then like years later, met up with Muneeb, and, you know, because we had known each other from Princeton. We met up in New York years later, and just started getting drinks together, catching up, seeing how we were doing. And through a lot of the conversations that we were having, we realized that we liked a lot of the same things, right? And we said, like, hey, well, why don't we just start a company together? And, you know, he was still doing his PhD at Princeton, and I was working for a company at the time, and we just said, hey, let's just drop what we're both doing and go and work on this. And so that's the start of it.
Awesome. And for anybody who's not familiar with what you're currently doing right now at Blockstack, I would love just maybe like a 60-second overview as far as of what Blockstack is, and then we'll really dive into the specifics of that as it goes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So with Blockstack, what we're doing is we're building a new internet. We're actually taking lessons from the existing internet and thinking about how the internet could be rebuilt in a way that puts people in more control, right? Mm-hmm. Puts people in control of their entire digital lives and in control of their data. And this is really, it's around the entire industry of decentralization and decentralized applications. And the way we're approaching this is we are building all of the components necessary to make this future a reality, right? Sure. So if we want people, it's like really starting with the goal, starting with the vision and the mission, and like thinking about how, like, what is really wrong with the internet today. And what we've concluded is that the main problems with the internet are that, one, we have situations where we heavily rely on intermediaries, and it's not it's not like real life. We're not able to communicate directly between people, but rather we heavily rely on not just often not just one party, but many different companies, Facebook, Google, et cetera, and all the third parties that are in the middle. And so this can result in issues in terms of reliability, in terms of privacy, in terms of security, and it can lead to issues with freedom of speech, and there's so many different problems with it. And then, you know, the second thing is that we just don't have ownership over our digital lives. We don't have ownership over our data, our identity, and our digital assets. And so if we can take that and we can really flip that on its head, and instead of all of us really plugging into APIs that companies run, instead of us asking Facebook for our data, instead of and then if you want to share your data with me, you know, you have to rely upon Facebook servers to facilitate that connection. Instead of that whole situation, we can move to a model where there's, in a sense, an internet of you and an internet of me, right? Where I have my data and everything that plugs into it can instantly get access to my data if I want that. And that's kind of like, it's not only beneficial from like a privacy and freedom perspective, but it can also enable some completely new things. It can enable completely new functionality and behaviors, like, for example, a augmentation of your brain personal search engine, where you can just say, "Hey, computer, show me this. You know, show me what I did last Thursday." Right? Like, so you can search through your thoughts, search through your experiences, things like that. And that is only really possible when you pull the data onto your own personal self. So there's that whole vision that really, really started with. And what we've done is we've built out the software that we believe will help us get to that place. And that involves all of the infrastructure that enables the building of decentralized applications. It involves whatever needs to be allow users to discover and sign into them. So, you know, that's a browser, that's an app store, that is the tools for storage and the tools for developers to integrate authentication, et cetera, et cetera. That is building out a blockchain so that we can facilitate certain components of identity and be able to power a decentralized domain name system and be able to allow developers to create their own tokens, things like that. So we really look at this as Blockstack is a movement. It is around a mission and a vision first, and then the software is one component of it. That is what helps us get where we're trying to go.
Sure. And one thing, so I was looking through your white paper recently, and I think one of the interesting approaches that you've had is having like a three layered system where you have the blockchain initially, and then I think it's the peer network and then storage on top of that. Can you talk a little bit about why you've chosen to do it in like a three layered approach and what you think the benefits are to doing so?
So we can take a look at an application called Leroy, which is this decentralized Twitter equivalent on top of Ethereum. And one of the big issues with Leroy is that it is designed so that every single tweet is put inside the blockchain, right? And that's it can be pretty straightforward for a developer to integrate like that, where they just, it's tempting for them to just use API for the blockchain and just put every single tweet in the blockchain. But of course, every single tweet requires a certain transaction fee to be sent out. And so that can be like $1 or $2 for every single tweet. And that's just not acceptable, right?
Yeah.
So there are these massive UX issues that result from apps not being scalable and apps having, So if the blockchain is not scalable and the blockchain has this latency in terms of the block times, that's going to impact the end user, right?
Okay.
And so the way that you address that is that you decide to not use the blockchain for everything, right? You only use the blockchain in cases where you need to use it, right? Okay. Or you think about what are the different tools that there are out there, and where do each of these tools shine, right? So the blockchain shines. You can think of blockchain as the most expensive way to store data ever conceived, right?
Pretty much.
It is like let's take some data and put it in 100% of the computers that are participating on this network. Normally, that would sound absolutely ridiculous. But for certain things, it's necessary, right? And the things for which it's necessary are the things where you need every single person to be aware of a certain piece of information. Yep. We call it global state. And that is things where one particular action could be invalidated by another action that someone takes, right? So that means any kind of digital ownership, right? Digital ownership of money, of tokens, of stocks, of licenses, of domain names, etc. Those are the things where the blockchain is really good, right? There are other things where it could be used, but it's not necessary, right? Mm-hmm. And often it's very costly and it doesn't actually make sense. So if you think that way, and then you think about, okay, well, there are other tools that can be used for decentralized applications. And those tools shine more with, for example, larger data payloads, and they shine more with other things. So then you think about, okay, well, let's use the blockchain for the things where it's absolutely necessary and where it shines, and let's not use the blockchain, let's use other tools where the blockchain is going to fail us. Sure. And that's where you get into this layered approach. And you know, you can think about how you can actually scale out that data, right? And for example, in certain cases, right, we look at the domain name system that we built on top of the blockchain, mm-hmm. and how that actually uses the three different layers. What it does is it uses the blockchain for the things that are absolutely necessary. It has the, you know, the name to it ties the name to a key that owns the name, a public key, right, or an address, and then it also ties it to a small representation of the data known as a hash, and that's the only thing that exists on the chain because that's the only thing that needs to exist on the chain. And then we use a unstructured peer-to-peer network. Called the Atlas Network in Blockstack, in order to store the actual data that is being hashed.
Right? Gotcha.
And that data is, the data that's being hashed is a directory file, right? It's known as a zone file in the domain name system. And that includes URLs to where the actual data is, right? And the reason for this multi-layered approach is that the blockchain, you want very, very little data, very costly, put the smallest that you can. Then in the peer-to-peer network, it can store a little more data, but it's also pretty costly because it requires a large number of computers around the world to host. And so then you use what the existing web runs on, which is URLs that can point to locations where more data is actually stored. So it's really just a pragmatic approach. It's a way to actually scale systems. And it is a way to build applications in a way where you will not run into walls as quickly in terms of cost and latency and so on. That means that if you built a decentralized Twitter in a way where the tweets were on a decentralized storage network that didn't use the blockchain, you could actually have the tweets go through almost immediately and actually mm-hmm. have them not require any transaction fee on the blockchain to be sent. So that is just like the way that just makes sense.
Totally. Right. And you know, kind of when you're talking about this, I think, you know, some of the things that come to mind, and I've been kind of looking into obviously Blockstack as a whole, and some of the applications that are being built on top of your platform, and then, you know, maybe in comparison to like an Ethereum at this point in time, which has applications like you know, talked about Leroy, and then you could look at CryptoKitties, which I guess is probably the only one that's reached some level of legit massive scale. But, and I guess we could define massive. But with the way in which Blockstack is structured, do you feel like that's favorable in comparison to maybe some of the other alternative solutions in terms of encouraging developers to create products and solutions on top of Blockstack? Has that been helpful for you to gain developers to come to your platform and start developing on top of it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there is a very large and growing set of developers that see the advantages that our model brings. And I would say, like, look, it's not just Blockstack. It's like, you could say, like, the Blockstack way or the Blockstack philosophy of building decentralized apps is really driven by pragmatism. And if another project decided to do something similar to what we're doing, it would also have a lot of the same benefits. But developers are really seeing, particularly the more experienced developers, ones that are, that's why, like, what we've seen is we've been attracting, like, a set of high quality developers to the project. Mm-hmm. And developers that would look at what plain and simple Ethereum offers, and they would look at apps like Leroy and apps that are using the blockchain for transactions that they really just shouldn't be using them for. They would look at that and kind of be taken aback, and just it wouldn't be appealing to them to build those apps on there. But if they looked at a system that made sense to them, then that's something that where they could say, oh, I could build an app on this, right? And that happens very frequently with us. One example, we can look at, there's this decentralized Google Docs that's being built on Blockstack called Graphite. And they got really popular recently, where they were number one on Hacker News. They stayed on top of Hacker News for 2 days. They got a great mention in a Wired article recently, and they've been getting, like, some really good usage. And it is a full-blown, decentralized Google Docs. It has docs. It has sheets. They're adding files soon. It's like a full suite of things. They're adding a chat module. It's really, really, really fascinating. And this is a type of application, because of the way it's designed, because of the tools that Blockstack provides, it could theoretically scale to every single person on the planet, right? That is because every single action that does not require the blockchain. It is, if, for example, if we're collaborating on a document, it is going to use your storage. It's going to use my storage. Everyone else is unaffected, right? Okay. That means that we could be using a particular document. Two other people could be collaborating on another document. They don't even see each other. It's not even affected. That means that there's really no limit to the number of people that could be using this particular product. The app runs on your computer, the app runs on my computer, and data is sent between our computers with the help of some relay servers in order for us to actually communicate and share and collaborate on those docs.
Sure. And, from my understanding, and too, I think, like you've said, I think one of the big advantages to, to the way Blockstack is structured is having, simply using blockchain type technology for maybe what you might consider, I don't know if it's mission critical, but something that really needs the the trust of a blockchain, and then having that separate layer for the peer network and for storage. How is storage actually structured? You talked a little bit about it previously, but how is storage how is that utilized and involved as that third layer with Blockstack?
So there's a few different approaches that we've seen for decentralized storage. Sure. And you could say one approach is this network similar to BitTorrent, right? Mm-hmm. And you have files and multiple nodes can decide to feed them, right? And you do that for every single file, and so you have multiple copies and they're replicated, and maybe you break them up into pieces, and your data is just spread out over this decentralized network of computers. And there's certain projects that are adopting that that way. One is IPFS and Filecoin. Another one is Swarm. And there's also Storage and Saya. So there's a few different projects that are taking that approach. And I think that's good for certain types of data. It's good for data that is going to be spread wide and is not user specific. So for example, movies or music, right? It's really good for those types of files. And of course it has its drawbacks. So there are some challenges in terms of reliability and loading the data from relying on a network like this. And there's just like inherent problems with the way that it works. But there's some great things that come from it. There's another model, and that's one that we focused on because it's really, really good for user-specific data, right? It's really good for data that I create and that I want to share with you. And the way it works is that I have a storage server, right? We call them hubs, you know, and on this storage network called Gaia. And I get a hub and you get a hub, right? And I store my data in my hub, you store your data in your hub. And if I want to share it with you, I can take it and encrypt it with your key, right? That data in that hub. And then you will get notified and you can grab that data down and pull it onto your machine. So it's really, it's thinking about, it's like, you can think of it like each person stores their own data and then permissions it out to the people who need to access it.
Absolutely. That makes, to me, that makes, I think, you know, kind of total sense. And I've even heard, I think there was one, it was maybe the TED Talk when kind of Muneeb was talking about the transition of the internet from having the majority of kind of the data and kind of the permissioning being on the side of the user used to be, and now with just the adaptation of basically pretty much 100% cloud type of solutions, that is all, you know, you're pretty much surrendered everything back to three, five, 10 companies, whatever it might be, who have all that control. So I think it's a really interesting approach. One of the questions I would just have, and we talked about it a little bit with, I think it was Graphite you mentioned, what's the status of some of these companies that are developing these decentralized apps on top of Blockstack and is that progressing at this point in time? What's kind of like the vision long term for some of these companies or developers that are building on top of Blockstack?
Yeah, I mean, we just did Blockstack Berlin, so that was a really great event.
Steal my thunder on the next question.
For sure. But it really ties in. So at the event, we had a demo day for applications that are building on Blockstack. We featured 10 teams, 10 applications, and they all presented, and Graphite was one of them. And we have a couple of teams that are either already venture funded or are currently in the process of raising a round. And one of them, Casa, actually announced a round at our summit. And we also have a team that is doing quite a bit of revenue, and they actually have increased their revenue by building on Blockstack. So they have their B2B, and they have a product that they sell, and then they can upsell their customers with the Blockstack-enabled product because those customers see the additional benefit of allowing the end user to be the end enterprise user to be in control of their data, right? So they see that as like, that's like a security benefit, that is a privacy benefit that they're willing to pay extra for to this company that's building a Blockstack, right? So there's some very, very interesting stages that these companies are at, from raising venture funding to being profitable. And we're just like at the beginning of this. So we just released multiplayer storage in January of this year. That was, you can think of that as a huge enabler for a lot of these applications. If you're just, so you're
that was
aware,
through like, that was through Gaia, right? Is that correct?
Exactly, Gaia. Okay. Yeah, multiplayer storage on Gaia. So what multiplayer Gaia is I can have a file and I can share it with you by just entering your name, right? And that experience for decentralized storage never existed before. Hasn't existed. No other decentralized storage network has that, right? Like there's no equivalent to that. That's a really big deal. That was a big milestone for us. And when you see that, we saw that as really important. Mm-hmm. Because that enabled apps like Graphite to be built. And this is really when we're starting to see that massive ramp up, because it actually makes building those kinds of applications so, so much easier. It's and developers have seen it, and that's why they're making some good progress, and that's why they're starting to build like pretty great businesses off of it.
Awesome. And you had mentioned it earlier, and I wanted to ask, you had a pretty awesome lineup at the Blockstack Berlin event. I was kind of the one, yeah, one question that I had in my mind was, just out of all the speakers, was there anything that kind of stuck out to you as like maybe the most interesting thing that was spoken about, you know, at your event in Berlin?
Yeah, so I think, so there's one really great segment that was, that's really memorable. So we had Edward Snowden speak, and he spoke about privacy and freedom and individual security. And he provided his perspective on a variety of topics. We had Peter Van Valkenburg from Coin Center interview him. So that was excellent. And then we also had Albert Wanger from Union Square Ventures to provide an alternate perspective on privacy. And he actually presented the case that privacy is not good in and of itself, but that there are ways, it's like a strategy to avoid a prosecution and a strategy to ensure your freedoms. And that there can be other ways for us to ensure freedoms, and that it might actually be more beneficial for us to take a step back on privacy in order to open up and get more freedom, get more platform openness, and so on and so forth. So we provided that. So I think it was good to have them back to back and provide like these two different perspectives. And I really like, there was a lot of great quotes from Edward Snowden. You know, we're going to be putting up all of the videos around the entire event online, and someone mentioned to me, they were like, I have never seen a better interview of Edward Snowden, and I was there in the audience, and this is the best thing I've ever seen. I don't want to oversell it, but it's like and Peter Van Valkenburg was excellent, like he interviewed him very well, so that was really good. Let's see what else. I mean, the teams that were demoing were excellent as well. You're going to see all of those, some of them. I mean, I was going. I didn't see the demos beforehand. Wasn't involved in what they were going to present, and I came and saw them, and I was really blown away. It was awesome. Very exciting. And then also what we did was we had speakers from so many different projects. What we did for the speaker lineup was we looked at who are the builders in the space, who are the people that are really not just talking, not just like saying what they're going to do, but actually doing and actually building and actually moving the space forward. And then we just invited who we thought were the top people in the entire space, the top builders. I mean, we're talking like we had representation from Lightning, we had Orchid, we had Aragon, we had Democracy Earth, we had Token, we had Filecoin and IPFS, we had Polkadot Labs. Polkadot / Parity. We had CryptoKitties. We had Basecoin. I mean, it was just insane.
Yeah.
So,
I remember all these projects. But. Yeah, I remember looking at the lineup when it got posted. I was like, God damn, that'd be nice if that was in New York City. But it was awesome. You know, one question I have. So one of the things I think is pretty cool about your project in general is you actually have basically two white papers, one for the tech and then one kind of for the utility of the token everything behind the token. And the thought process that you, I don't remember how many pages it is, but it's definitely over, I think it's over 15 pages specifically just on the utility of the token and how that's going to be just utilized within the Blockstack ecosystem. I know that you had previously done a token sale and then have kind of what looks to be a really fair approach to the distribution of the token. Where is the timeline at for kind of how that's moving forward and how is that ecosystem going to be kind of run in the future, or how is Blockstack going to be run in the future with the token?
Yeah, for sure. So that's a bunch of questions in there. So
Pretty rough at asking a bunch of questions at once.
Okay, so timeline in the document, in all the documents that we sent out and published around the token and the blockchain that we're coming out with, we set up milestones. So we were very thoughtful about the governance and incentives of the system. And we were very thoughtful about putting investor protections in place. And what we've decided to do was have this token sale, but lock up some of the funds for certain milestones. So, for example, from the token sale, the company that administrates gets 20% of the funds up front, and then the remaining of the 80% is locked for milestone 1 and 2. And the first milestone is the blockchain going live, and the deadline for that is by the end of the year, right? So that is milestone 1 that releases the next 40% of the funds, and then milestone 2 releases the remaining 40%, which is when the blockchain has 1 million verified users. So we've really, like, we're very thoughtful about this. We wanted to provide some level of structure and some level of guidance for ourselves and for the broader ecosystem, and also a way for investors to be protected and be able to get their money back if there's some problem with the project or the actual network doesn't get shipped in a timely fashion. So with that said, what that means is that we are doing everything we can to ensure that the blockchain goes live this year and that people are able to trade the token. We're going to be publishing some more details as we get some more information about the exact timing of it. Sure. But that's like the top, the first guideline. So that's question number one. Question number two.
More on the utility of the token, as far as I know, there's kind of multiple, there's kind of multiple maybe reasonings behind how the token will be utilized. Maybe just touch a little bit on of how the token will actually function within the Blockstack ecosystem in the future.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, the token is going to be used for every operation that occurs on the blockchain with Blockstack. And that is, the first thing is the domain name system. So any kind of domain that's being registered, you can think of that, we're using that as the identity backbone of the entire system. So that's like, that domain name system is really, really important. And so registrations, transfers, et cetera, will be required for it. Every transaction on Blockstack will use the token. And what that means is that if you're transferring the tokens themselves, of course, just like a Bitcoin transaction or an Ethereum transaction, that requires some mining fee to be used to the miner to be sent to the miners to be able to be sent. And then also for developers that are building on top of Blockstack and using new types of operations or deciding to build their own tokens, that is something that we're experimenting with. And in that case, they would also be using the underlying token. And you can think of this as, traditionally we have operated this domain name system that's on top of Bitcoin, but over time we are working towards building out our own blockchain that also utilizes the core security properties of the Bitcoin blockchain. So it's this transition period that will allow the network to be more robust and allow it to have more greater number of transactions that can go through it, and also lower latencies and things like that. And so it's really like a very important upgrade to the network.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think just the approach in general that you're taking too with the kind of the milestone based process is, it's pretty interesting, and I think it's in a lot of cases probably a refreshing change from how the just, you know, the kind of incentive structure behind maybe the traditional ICO or the traditional token sale might be involved, where it's all up front and, you know, the minimal lockups and there's really no promise of actual delivery. It's almost like a real Series A, Series B, Series C type deliverables, which is pretty cool and pretty refreshing. And I think, you know, a nice approach on your end.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. I mean, the way we thought about this was, it wasn't just for ourselves. We wanted to set an example for the entire space, because we saw what was happening with the space, and we saw that all of these really strange, unsophisticated practices that were being utilized by these different projects, and we wanted to see that change. And so we said, hey, like, if people, it's the change isn't just going to happen by itself, and it's not the best thing's not going to come from regulations that are pushing it forward. I think we need to take responsibility and we need to do things in a responsible way. And why shouldn't we start with setting an example and try to help out the entire space, figure out and hone in on best practices. So there's that whole side of it, whole side with the milestones. And then another thing that you alluded to was the distribution, like the fair distribution and working towards something that's more, able to get tokens in the hands of more people, able to have a much wider distribution. So that was extremely important to us as well. And for a few reasons, I mean, It's important because it's important because for a few reasons. So one, I would think about how in the long term, there's going to be so many blockchains that are going to emerge. There's already so much competition. There's going to be blockchains that exist over the next few decades. Blockchains will fall, blockchains will rise, and there is a strong incentive for the broader public to use blockchains where they are, where the actual tokens are accessible to them, mm-hmm. and where the tokens are, they can be obtained at a reasonable price. And so that what that means is that there's a very strong dominant case for blockchains that have wide distributions, right? If there's some blockchain that's able to outcompete the blockchains today that are existing as the as a decentralized money or like sound money, it's going to be something that is able to have some very wide distribution. That's my belief. And so that's something that where you can think about how a wide distribution can be a very strong competitive advantage for a blockchain. And it may not be as obvious now. It may not be as, like you can see very skewed distributions like that exist with Ripple, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Way more than 50% is being owned by a single entity, and to some extent, people still trade and people still buy and people don't care. And so, in the short term, that's absolutely something that is that's the state of the market right now. Mm-hmm. But over time, I do believe we will see an interesting shift, and you will start to see a lot more projects that emerge that are around the idea of a so-called fair coin, where people attempt to give an equal number of coins to everyone around the world. That those kind of experiments will happen, and it would be extremely difficult because of they will run into a lot of problems because it's very hard to prove that someone's a unique individual. Once you put that much money on the line, there's going to be ways to game it. But any way that you can kind of get close to that in some perspective, and any way that you can do that, that provides a very, very strong competitive advantage for that blockchain in the long term. I think we'll see that a lot more going on. And you know, another way to look at this is the token holders at any given point in time. That's your community, right? And so the wider the base that you can build out, the more the broader the community that you can start with, right? Yeah. The more people that really believe even further in what you're doing, right? And and have a reason, you know, an additional reason to participate. So it's like you think of it like building this ecosystem. Really, you have a strong advantage if you are doing a wide distribution.
Yeah.
And the other thing is this is something that we haven't seen. We've only seen to a certain extent, but Naval Ravikant talks about this a lot, which is that there is going to be a wave of forks that happen where a lot of these projects are increasingly forked. I mean, a great example is actually Z Classic. I don't know if you're familiar,
yeah.
But yeah. You know your stuff. So you know, Zcash, they had a certain percentage that they allotted to the core team. It was 20%
yep.
of all of the coins, and Z Classic emerged, took out. It's 10% of all the coins, but in the first 4 years, it is 20% of those coins
yep.
that exist. To clarify, and Z Classic came along, cut out that 20, and just came out with a blockchain that doesn't have that. And it actually, I think it was for a while, I don't know if it still is, was trading like 1/5 of the Zcash blockchain, which is pretty insane. But it just shows that there's, and this is happening with other blockchains, still to a very minor extent, but it's going to happen a lot more, I believe. And forking might become a much more regular thing. So with all of these things in consideration, these are all these different levers and considerations. I think it's really important to think about distributions. Just for one more example, you know, we think about the distribution of Ethereum. Like the Ethereum distribution is also like pretty skewed. I think there's some analysis that was done of the decentralization of Ethereum, and it's not great. I mean, you had a crowd sale that was about $18 million, and you had several people that put in on the order of like $1 million. And that crowd sale accounted for about 70%, 75% of all Ethereum that'll ever exist, right? And so it's like this, you have the situation where there's a few individuals that probably have like 3, 4, or 5% of all of Ethereum, which like that participated in the crowd sale, which like is, you know, it's not bad in and of itself, but if you do, if that's the case for like a very large percentage of the base, then it can be an issue. Particularly if coins emerge that can outcompete them in terms of distribution. And so that's like something that we thought about a lot. The other thing is, we thought a lot about the incentives for the different participants in the system. So we have a three-pronged mining system. So one is like traditional proof of work like mining. It's actually using proof of burn, you can think of proof of burn as a way to actually simulate proof of work, but on a second layer. And then we have a second prong, which is what we call app rewards mining. So we're actually giving out mining rewards to app developers for building on the network. And this is really, really, really powerful. It's powerful because we can actually give funding to app developers just for building great apps. And that means that they don't necessarily have to do a token. That means that they don't necessarily have to monetize early on. That means that they just have to build great software. And this is something that I do believe will prove to be an extremely powerful force for propelling Blockstack to the next level in terms of app development. You will see app developers like just building apps because they can just make so much money by the mining system just pouring money into their bank accounts. And then the third one is the Web of Trust mining, where if you sign up, there's an Oracle system that we have where if we detect that you are a real unique user, then you will get tokens sent to your account just by having signed up and having verified your account. And so this is just a way to get a really, really wide distribution to incentivize the right things, which is to incentivize app growth and incentivize user growth, as opposed to incentivizing people to just hold and not, you know, not incentivize the work that contributes to the building of the ecosystem. Right.
Totally. Yeah. And I think too, the kind of app development approach is a really interesting one. I think, you know, kind of the whole case of development and kind of the incentive structures for talented developers now, at least it's in a lot of cases, it seems like not necessarily misaligned, but there's a lot more of an incentive to go maybe, you know, start your own company, run an ICO, do something else rather than to develop on top of Ethereum or develop on top of something else because maybe the money's not there to do that. But if there's an opportunity now with Blockstack to kind of flip that on its head, I think that's a really interesting way to approach things.
Yep, absolutely.
Getting to the end of the kind of the hour here for us. So is there anything maybe on my end that I didn't touch base on? Any questions in regards to kind of Blockstack or anything that you wanted to get across to folks that I didn't touch on as much?
Yes, there are, I'm sure there are some things. I'm just trying to think about it. Yeah, I mean, like we could talk about like different types of decentralized apps, like what one thing that we think a lot about is what we're doing. We're not just about building software and building infrastructure and helping developers actually build their apps, but we also provide. We're looking at this as like a full blown ecosystem building effort. And there's the software, of course, but we also seek to provide funding and help mentorship to help people, help developers raise capital. We work with different entities that have like, there's an ecosystem fund called the Signature Fund that provides, it's a $25 million fund that actually provides investment in into applications that are building on top of Blockstack. And as we were talking about before, there's quite a few teams that are raising from the Signature Fund and from other funds to date. And then we also look at this from the perspective of helping developers figure out what they should build, what they should work on. And you know, we don't have all the answers. We're not there. You know, there's people who are, of course, going to come up with a lot more interesting ideas than we do. But what we can do is, like, we can try to help facilitate all this information and help connect people and help advise people on what, based on what we've seen and what we know, what we think will take off. And what we're actually coming out with soon is this thing called Request for Dapps, mm-hmm. which is this, we're announcing a list of different types of dApp, decentralized applications that we'd like to see, different categories like social networks, marketplaces, et cetera. Awesome. And we're coming out with these different category of requests and challenging developers to build these types of apps and saying, look, here are all the different possibilities out there. Here's what we would love to see. And here are things that you could get funding from the Signature Fund for doing if you end up building it. And I would say there are certain things where we think will gain some great, will be the things that are most
likely to gain traction
to work on early on. Yeah, exactly. There's certain things that are great and might work later, but it might not make sense to work on them in 2018, mm-hmm. for example. I think a great example of that is a decentralized Uber. That's the, if anything, I think the last decentralized app that might take off is a decentralized Uber. Just because, you know, it's hard enough building a decentralized app, right? And do you really want to compete with Uber, right? Like, let's put it another way. Every single layer of network effects makes things more complex, yeah. right? Well, so it's first of all, it's a two-sided market, right? It has network effects. It has geographically dependent network effects, and it has temporally dependent network effects. That means that you need to have the right number of drivers and riders in a particular area at a particular time. That is a hard thing to do. And you need a heck of a ton of logistics, and there's just so many things that you need to put in place. So that kind of thing, I personally, when I advise teams, I just say to avoid those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Look, you can do it if you want to try, but like I think it's going to take some time to take off.
Yeah.
Things that are more likely to take off in the short term. One big category, things like collaboration tools, right? Graphite, perfect example. Because they can provide some very interesting properties like privacy and censorship resistance, and they can scale from day one, right? And the other thing is they don't need network effects. You can, the fact, if like, it's just you and your friend using it, you can get just as much utility if there's a million other people using mm-hmm. it, right? And so that's a lot easier to scale than like a Facebook or something like
sure.
that. So there's levels there. And so there's a lot of types of decentralized applications. And I just, something I would look out for, this request for dApps, that's going to be really exciting. But you know, also what I would say is anyone who wants to talk to us about decentralized apps, we're always up for that. Like love those kinds of conversations.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of exciting things that we're...
For people outside of developers that are end users, how would you recommend getting started with Blockstack? I know I downloaded Blockstack. I played around with it a little bit. How would you recommend for anybody who is not a developer but maybe wants to participate in what your team is building?
Yeah, for sure. So a few things. One, yeah, I would definitely try downloading the Blockstack browser. We have a bunch of apps in there, and we're adding more and more every month. And so that's really exciting. You can try it out. Would love to hear from you and what you think about the apps and what you'd like to see as well. And then there's many different ways that if you're interested in contributing to the ecosystem other than providing software and code. So there, of course, you could join a team, right, as a non-technical person if you'd like to work on a startup that's building on top of Blockstack. You can also participate by hosting meetup groups. You can jump in our Slack, jump in our forum, jump in our Reddit. You can just spread the word. You can participate in our summits that we do every 6 months. There's just so many ways. And ask us questions. Like we're here to be a resource. And I do think something that would be valuable would be a listing of readings like outside of Blockstack, like just more broad readings that we can provide to say like, hey, here's what you should read up on. Here's what you could do to get started. And I think, of course, like shows like yours, like you provide like really, really great perspective for a lot of people. And I think you cover a lot of the right things in terms of what people should know to get started with this stuff. So your show, I would highly recommend it. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think YouTube videos, articles are great to get acquainted with. And then there's a couple of books out. But one thing that you now make me think is we should come up with a list of resources that we should share. So
yeah,
look out for that.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think that's all great advice. You know, whether it's you're getting started technically speaking on the development side, or if you're kind of more of an end user, a non-technical person trying to dive into the space, I think that's all really, really awesome advice. So I appreciate that, and I think a lot of other people that are that are going to end up watching this very shortly will appreciate that as well. But I really appreciate your time and you kind of sticking around here for all of these questions. It's been awesome to speak with you, and I know I'm really looking forward to seeing how Blockstack continues to develop, and also like you've indicated as well, the applications that are going to continue to be built on top of it. I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on some of those that are coming out, so I'm excited for that.
Cool. Yeah, and we send them out to our email list, so make sure you sign up there, and we'd love to keep you updated. So really excited about the future of these apps.
Awesome. Well, I definitely appreciate the time.